slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Good morning. This is Len Iaquinta for Community Matters, and our topic today is a report from Madison and a report on homelessness and food insecurity here in Kenosha County. For the first part of the program, we have State Senator Robert Wirch, Democrat of Summers, representing Senate District 22, which includes parts of Kenosha and Racine County. And in the second part of the program, Mr. Leif Peterson, the Executive Director of the Grace Welcome Center in Kenosha, and he's on the ground, involved on a weekly, daily basis with food insecurity and homelessness issues. We were going to have a Republican from the House also on the program, but none of the members that we approached were able to spare time for us this week, and we invite one of them to come back in the future to talk on this program. Now to Senator Wirch. Welcome, Senator Wirch. How are you today?
Good. Thank you for having me on your program.
Oh, thank you for breaking away for a moment to come in and come by the studio. As you may recall, this summer a subcommittee of the Kenosha County's Emergency Services Committee held a summit on homelessness and poverty. They called attention to needs in Kenosha and Racine counties, both parts of which you represent, and called for the legislative branch to pass bills to fund initiatives proposed by a Republican-appointed committee and chaired by the Lieutenant Governor. My understanding is that we're in the process here of making this come to pass, and that we're hoping that by early in 2020, this money can be flowing to help ease homelessness and poverty. Can you bring us up to date, and what needs to happen next?
Well, first of all, let me give you the background, the situation on dealing with homelessness. And by contrast, I'll compare with Minnesota. Minnesota is a similar state to Wisconsin. Minnesota spends $40 million helping the homeless in their state. Wisconsin spends $3.7 million helping the homeless. This puts a tremendous burden on local government and the churches and the other charities out there to pick up the slack for what the state does not pay. Now, there was a homeless committee chaired by the former Lieutenant Governor Clayfish that recommended another $3.7 million for helping the homeless. I distributed a letter asking legislators to follow those recommendations into the new administration, put it into the budget. It is in the budget, but we need to get that money out to the providers in the 72 counties. Right now, the Assembly has passed the legislation. It is in the Senate. I have to be careful how I say this because it's in kind of a fluid situation. There were six different bills on how to distribute that money, training and housing and stuff like that. One of the six bills has been exec'd out and is ready to be sent to the floor of the legislature. But it ain't over till it's over. We have to make sure it gets scheduled, and that decision is made by Scott Fitzgerald. And Scott Fitzgerald may be busy now. He's also running for Congress. But we have to get that passed before the end of session. Otherwise, the money doesn't get out to help the homeless in Wisconsin. So I would ask your listeners to put pressure on Republican legislators Republican senators to get this money out to help with the homeless in our area.
And can you tell us a little bit, Senator Wirch, how this money would help? Some specific examples that our listeners could get their hands around.
Well, the subcommittee asked for money to go for case management, to work with individuals, to help them find housing. And clearly housing is a big problem in our area. Let me just give you some examples of what the problem is like. Racine County, from 2017 to 2018, jumping homeless from 194 to 275, that's 42% up. Kenosha County went from 167 cases to 194, up 16%. So real problem with homelessness in our area, Racine and Kenosha, and everyone knows the tight housing situation out there, which makes it even more difficult.
You're probably familiar with the meta-studies that a Harvard professor has been releasing and others have been commenting on that seem to demonstrate that coast-to-coast and border-to-border rapid economic development is not the savior in terms of totally resolving issues of homelessness and poverty. In fact, the research seems to indicate that rapid economic development widens the income gap, forces more people into homelessness, and may increase poverty in many areas. And even our local economic development organizations are concerned with this and have some programs to help mitigate it, although they're very laudable, don't get me wrong, but it's kind of like nibbling around the edges. I just wonder if you would comment on that and what perspectives you see for intervention at the state of Wisconsin level, Senator Warch.
Well, this is the problem of poverty and income inequality. And every book I've read on poverty says raise the minimum wage, and they won't even consider that in the state of Wisconsin. You know, poverty is lack of money and then lack of being able to afford a home. And so I think it's 26 or 27 states have raised the minimum wage. They don't even consider it with the Republicans in our state legislature. So that's part of the problem there. We have problems with low-cost housing. Let me just interject here. A wonderful success story, and you should do a program on it, are the tiny houses that they built for veterans up in Racine.
We did.
You did. Okay, good. I missed that one. I'm sorry I missed it. But I had a chance to visit there, and it's so gives the veterans a home of their own. A sense of pride that they have that home and no government money involved. And it's just something corporations and motorcycle gangs have all worked to support this endeavor. And I would certainly, I know Mayor Tom Barrett of Milwaukee visited and wants to replicate it in Milwaukee. So certainly that's something to look at. It means you change some zoning and some local regulations, but the best way to deal with homelessness is find people a home. And it's a perfect example of an Racine.
People who regularly listen to Community Matters know that Iquina has an interest in redistricting as a matter of good government. Mm-hmm. I'm always asking about it. Senator Warch, what is your position on redistricting? What can be done to ensure that every Wisconsinite's vote counts equally? Do you go for an independent commission? Exactly what would you do? Some people said that we should have an equal population in every assembly district and rules making districts as compact as possible. What solutions do you see? This is not just a Wisconsin problem, but if we're going to deal with the issue in Wisconsin, it's going to be on our own and it's going to be you and your colleagues that will deal with it.
Well, I'll be blunt. We have crooked maps out there, and they were drawn, I believe, Robin Voss had his fingerprints all over them by expensive Republican law firms out there. And the only time we had a trial on that was in Madison, and they were found to be unconstitutional. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court punted when they had a chance to fix the maps. On a technicality, they said it wasn't their decision to make and put it back on the legislative bodies. But these are crooked maps, and they're a disincentive for people to vote. We look in our area. I mean, we used to have two competitive state Senate districts. We now have one that favors a Republican and one that favors a Democrat. And I'm the Democrat, and I'm saying that in public. So we need to get back to fair maps. I think that's what we need to do, and the only way you do that is to get the politicians out of the decision process, and you do that with an independent commission. Iowa does it, and it's not just fair maps. And I would say this to Voss and Fitzgerald and the other Republicans, you have wasted the taxpayers' money in setting up these crooked maps. You paid high-priced lawyers to make up the maps. You paid high-priced lawyers to defend these maps in court. You've wasted the taxpayers' money on crooked maps, and it's time to fix it for the sake of our democracy and fair elections.
Thank you. Senator Wirch, I almost hesitate to bring up this question because it's so emotional for all around the state still. Act 10. Looking back, what have been the effects of Act 10? Positive, some, maybe negative, some, maybe some unintended by all of us. And do you think any reforms or updates are necessary?
Yes, I think that, first of all, the Republicans went after unions with a baseball bat, and they almost destroyed unions in our state, taking away their rights for contract bargaining. And, you know, if they wanted to change things, they could have just changed the mediation arbitration rule. And but no, these people, you scratch these people below the surface, they're anti-union and anti-worker. And they showed that in Act 10. And if they wanted to change things, like I say, they could have allowed the unions to exist, just take away mediation arbitration power. And now what do you see? You see a lot of our teachers leaving the area. Wages are low. They're going across the border into Illinois to get better jobs that pay more. You're seeing teachers going into other areas. You just saw that with Kenosha Unified, with all the openings before the fall school year started. And you're seeing it in other ways. So they've devalued the profession, and that only hurts our children who need an education.
Anything that you would change in particular? Do you see any chance of making any changes in the current session?
No. The Republicans are just anti-worker. I brought up a wage theft bill, and it'll never get to the floor. I was lucky enough to get a hearing on it about
wage theft. Is that pretty uncontroversial?
Well, I think 18 states have done something to help out usually low-income workers who are asked to work off the clock, waitresses that don't get the tips that they work for, other things like that. And so we wanted to make it easier for low-income workers to get the money that they work for. Nope, Republicans will not bring that up on the floor. So there's a pattern there. Act 10 against wage theft, right to work, refuse to raise the minimum wage. There's a real pattern there of anti-worker conduct.
Senator Wirch, top of mind this fall is death by firearms. With ever more aggressive active shooter drills in the schools and the security to get in the buildings, even screenings of Joker in the area this past week have featured enhanced security measures, some seen, some unseen. What changes in firearms regulations to ensure public safety do you advocate?
Well, I'm concerned about, clearly I think we need background checks to keep guns out of the hands of unstable people, and I particularly am concerned about what I call war weapons, AK-15, AK-47. I think that those are not the weapons that you buy to go deer hunting or bear hunting. Unfortunately, they use it to go hunt people, and that's not a good thing. And so I'm very concerned about that. Background checks. Now let me say this, too. I have won awards from wildlife organizations for being pro-hunting. I believe it's part of our heritage. So I'm the last person that wants to take weapons away from people, but you should be happy to have a shotgun, a deer hunting rifle, or perhaps even a pistol. But these weapons of war concern me out there, and I don't think they have a legitimate purpose.
Thank you. First responders tell me that the cost of their health care at the individual level, and especially for families, is becoming unsustainable. They wonder if the state can find a solution to provide for our first responders the best health care available, which they deserve, and also keep it affordable.
Well, first of all, the Republicans are working against that. Why do I say that? First of all, the state doesn't set wages local government does. And look what's happening right now, where they're taking cuts in Racine, the first responders that you talked about. Police and firefighters are taking cuts in their pay and benefits. So why is that happening? And same thing in Kenosha. They don't have money for increases. Kenosha is a little bit better off because they have growth in their community and a little bit more money, but they're still hurting. So the problem is that the state, the Republicans in charge, have cut off shared revenue. And so they're financially strangling the cities, and that is a real problem out there for paying first responders. And so,
well, why would they want to strangle the cities in this way? That certainly casts it in the worst light possible. But what possible motivation is there for that policy?
I believe
from your viewpoint,
I believe it's political because they believe there's more Democrats in cities, and they represent rural areas, and it's the old battle between rural and urban interests in the legislature.
Senator Wirch, looking backward again and taking a look at how things are unfolding with Foxconn, how do you evaluate the deal so far? It's been almost, what, a year and a half now since the first deal was signed and talked about? What would you do differently next time if you could? Or what should the state have done? Or what do you think the local counties should have done differently? And then there's the property owners who have lost lands and homes. Some of them seem to have valid complaints about the eminent domain process and wonder if the taking of their property was even necessary to begin with. What do you say, Senator Wirch?
Well, I'll be up front. I voted for the Foxconn deal. I was the only state senator that did that. And let me tell you why. I'm a third-generation factory worker, and I was around here in the 90s when the factories were shutting down and going to China or going to Mexico. And so I was happy to see some money coming back from the Orient to establish good-paying jobs in our area. And I represent Racine and Kenosha, and Kenosha has a overflow of good jobs. We have companies coming in all the time. We have Amazon. We have Uline. We have full industrial parks. We're doing well. But Racine needed those jobs, and Racine usually was leading the state in unemployment figures. And so I voted for Foxconn. If I had to do it over again, certainly more accountability. I don't think Walker put up the best deal. And the strange thing is about whenever legislators were talking to about Foxconn, we were talking to Walker's cabinet secretaries instead of people from Foxconn. So looking back, we should have more accountability. But having said that, I still think it's a plus because I've seen people get hired, and there's a lot of construction workers that have made a lot of money so far off building Foxconn so far. I've known young people, Gateway graduates, who have gotten good jobs with Foxconn so far.
What about those property owners who are still wondering why they didn't get the deal that they thought they should have gotten, and there looks like their property might not be used at all? Is the eminent domain process fair, or does it need to be reformed, would you say, Senator?
Well, let's go back. And the Supreme Court made a decision many years ago saying that local government could take land for economic development. And so there was a pushback from the states after that. We passed a bill saying it could only be done for blighted areas, and yet somehow the lawyers got to work and classified that area as a blighted area. I'm not a lawyer, but I still scratch my head over that one.
So your blight might be my fixer-upper?
Yes, but I think, if you look at it, look, there were people that made out like a bandit on that with getting money at 130% of assessment, and they went off and enjoyed their retirement, whatever. There were other people that had a deep interest in where they were living and didn't want to sell, and that is tragic. Clearly, I would be interested in revisiting eminent domain legislation in the future.
Senator Wirch, tourism depends on a lot, and I think on more than just ads saying how wonderful we are in Wisconsin. There have to be attractions. Should the state do more to help municipalities and the small towns develop their historic downtowns through grants to preserve and update facades, perhaps to make our small towns places people want to stop at and walk around in as they go on their vacations?
Yes, and but there's only so much money to go around, and I'm frustrated that we've given huge tax cuts to big business, manufacturing and ag tax cut, which you look at it, some manufacturers pay nothing in taxes in the state, and so that cut off revenue that's come into our state. Remember, we have to have a balanced budget, but definitely we have not given enough money to cities and local government.
Well, continuing on that vein, whether it's mayors or county execs or village administrators who have appeared on this program, Community Matters, they all complain about restraints the state puts on them regarding raising revenue. Do you agree? What restraints should there be, and which could the state abandon? Is there a reason for any more regulations and restraints on home rule? What would you tell them?
Yeah, this is
you're in charge up there in Madison.
And this is frustrating because I used to be a county board supervisor before I went on to the state, and I believe the best government is the government closest to the people. And I think that they should have a referendum on raising taxes to meet community needs. But they're forbidden to do that, once again, by the big Republican, government Republicans up there. Who've forgotten? Robin Voss used to be a county board supervisor just like I was, and yet they've forgotten local government. And we have to allow local government to go to the people and ask for an increase. One of the reasons that Racine has their problems versus Kenosha is that Kenosha has that 0.5% sales tax that brings money into the coffers to pay for local problems, and Racine does not. But let the people decide, let local government that's closest to the people decide whether to raise taxes, and I don't believe Madison should be second-guessing duly elected local officials.
Thanks, Senator Wirch. And now for part two of our program. I'm here with Leif Peterson, the executive director of the Grace Welcome Center on 60th Street, just shy of downtown, the uptown neighborhood of Kenosha. Good morning, Leif.
Good morning, Len. Thank you for having me.
Now, aren't you the Leif Peterson that I saw on the front page of the Kenosha News recently?
I could be the same, yes.
Okay. Just so our listeners can connect the dots. That was a very nice article, and we're in great admiration of the work you and the Grace Welcome Center are doing, Leif.
Thank you so much.
We've had exposition from Senator Wirch about the problems of homelessness and poverty at the very beginning of the program, and then we went on to some other topics. And now I'd like to turn to Mr. Peterson because he is deeply involved on the ground. As I like to say, he's up to his armpits in chicken fat, really working on the problem. Leif, with respect to the state of the problem currently as we head into the winter, what is the intelligence you're getting from the Kenosha and Racine area about the state of the homeless population? Are you experiencing any trends? What are you learning? Fill us in.
Thank you. First, I just wanted to mention that on October 10th this year was World Homeless Day. It's been in existence now since 10-10-10. And this is a problem. Homelessness exists all year long. People talk about it in the fall and winter when things get cold in this area. But it exists all year long for us. We've seen a huge increase in people that are coming and looking for shelter. We have, since September 2018, had representatives from Kenosha Human Development Services with us each Thursday and Friday morning at Grace Welcome Center because we have so many people coming in looking for shelter that we are one of their big points for getting people into this system.
So they make contact while
make
people
contact.
Are having breakfast.
Yes.
And that's really a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Lois Duncan does a wonderful job with that. And actually, all of the Human Development Services group, Janine and Lisa, they're doing a wonderful job in town. We, unfortunately, I think in the Racine Kenosha area are seeing an increase in homelessness. Many people are at risk for homelessness, and they are coming for us for shelter. The number of people coming and looking for assistance is outstripping the community's ability to provide adequate resources for shelter and for housing. The federal government has a program for Housing First, for affordable housing in the community. There is a very much a lack of affordable housing, and the small amount of housing that is available drives up the prices. So there are people staying in shelter longer than necessary to keep them safe because there isn't housing available for them to go to. Everyone is vulnerable to being homeless. It's not just those with drug or alcohol abuse issues or with mental illness or past criminal activities. Everyone makes bad decisions sometimes in their life. Yesterday there was a meeting of the individuals that are in the 10th city in Milwaukee that they're trying to shut down. And one of the folks was quoted as saying, "I'm not a bad person. I just made bad decisions."
And, of course, it doesn't take much for a catastrophic health emergency or being the victim of a traffic accident or any losing your job through no fault of your own because of shifts in your particular economic sector that, of course, we as individuals have zero control over. These can all contribute to sudden homelessness because most households, as has been documented repeatedly by economic studies, are maybe a couple of months away from having severe problems in terms of making their bills paid and keeping shelter over their heads.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of working people in our community that don't have a safety net for finances. They aren't saving anything. They're living off their credit cards. And any sudden illness, as you said, or injury, and they can suddenly have insurmountable bills. I've worked with many people in the past who have had good jobs that were laid off. They lost their job, and because their credit card debt was so high, they lost everything, and they ended up homeless. And it happened so quickly, they didn't see it coming. So people need to be prepared for that. And unfortunately, so many of us today are just one paycheck away from disaster.
And that has become very common in all age groups, really, particularly for people with families. We have issues with a lot of families with children that you come in contact with. Isn't that right?
We've had, besides just individuals that are homeless, we have families that are living in their van because they've lost their housing, they've lost their job, and they come to us looking for food and shelter and clothing. We've been able to help them and refer them, but it is very difficult. It's a matter of dignity, too. We are trying to lift people up one at a time because it's very hard for these folks to ask for help. So we've been working hard to build trust in the community so that they can make that ask. And it's very difficult for people to ask for rolls of toilet paper and hygiene products. And yet they do, and they're in tears when they do it. But we try and lift them up as we supply them with those items. Homeless people, I should say that there's not just homeless. There's a number of folks in our community and Racine as well, southeastern Wisconsin, that are couch surfers. These are folks that don't fit the federal criteria or the HUD criteria for homelessness. They haven't spent a night on the street yet, but they are living with family members. Frequently a mother or father is taking them in off the street, and then they're at friends' or other relatives' houses. And they, in some cases, have to leave before the sun comes up and can't come back until sunset because the landlord will evict them if they find out that someone is staying in these small apartments with them. So they spend most of the days on their street. They have no ability to take a shower and get clean clothing. So we are now, on Thursdays and Fridays, very happy to provide a service to the folks that are homeless or couch surfers. And we have 20 to 25 people each week that are taking showers in the morning when they come for breakfast.
Now, this is right at the Grace Welcome Center.
Yes,
on
60th Grace
Street
Welcome
and,
Center.
What, 21st Avenue?
22nd.
22nd.
Mm-hmm. 21st, actually. And when we give them showers, we give them new underwear, new socks, new T-shirts, hygiene products, deodorant, toothpaste, whatever. It's about $10 worth of merchandise that we're giving each person when they come and take showers, and that's giving their dignity back to them. I think you'll realize if you look or smell homeless, it's very difficult for you to get a job if you're applying for one. If you're looking to find an apartment, they'll look past you. It's hard to get medical care, and it's even hard for people to get into restaurants and get a seat at a table where others are, because restaurants sometimes ask them to leave before they've even been able to order because they're judged on the way they look and smell.
Now, we have some really good human services agencies in the county, particularly Kenosha Human Development Services, that do a wonderful job with a highly trained expert staff and a vision for what the services are that need to be provided. However, there are some barriers. One of them is the way we keep statistics on homeless. I have a problem with that. I also have a problem with the way we keep statistics on the employment and unemployment figures, too, because statistics are only as good as the parameters for which they're set up. And so we, in essence, have a statistical system that deliberately excludes a class of individuals that normal people like you and I would call homeless because they don't have a place to live. They're couch surfing, but they don't come up in the numbers. But you can't get funding based on those hunches of Len and Leaf, can you?
Exactly. No, they don't count in the official figures.
Plus, in order to house people, we have a wonderful philosophy here, and it's actionable. The Human Development Services of Kenosha County is doing a wonderful job of getting people on their feet who have been homeless and then housing them as rapidly as possible. But the precursor for that is that housing has to exist. What are you seeing about moving people out of an agency care situation into actual landlord housing? Is it correct that there just isn't housing available to move people as quickly as they ought to be moved?
There is not, and I think that's a priority that the city and county should work together on. There are vacant lots in our area that are available, and I think incentives need to be made for builders to do this and provide this for the community. There needs to be some place for people to go because Shalom people are backed up. They keep them in much longer than anticipated because there is no housing for the county to get them into for housing first.
And there are a lot of barriers. Developers tell me that what we think is affordable for rent is not what they think is affordable for them to build, and they're in it to make a profit. They're not eleemosynary institutions. They're contractors that need to pay their bills and to make a reasonable profit. I understand that, but there are barriers in lot size, in zoning, square feet that we establish that are really forms of discrimination, if you want to be honest about
it. They certainly are, and I think they need to revisit those so that they can create incentives for builders to create housing that's necessary for the demand that is currently there and the anticipated increase in demand in the future.
Why don't you talk about that? We know that, and we discussed earlier in the program that there is research, that's really good research, that suggests that the more rapid economic development an area has, the more likely it is that income disparity will increase, poverty will increase, and homelessness will increase. And those are facts. They're not intuitive. They're counterintuitive. That's why the research is so important. And the basic conclusion of that research was rapid economic development requires very astute thinking and planning to mitigate those effects, which are generally seen throughout the country, no matter the region. Is that how you're seeing it? And I would say that even the millennials I know are not saving any money and are getting jobs that don't allow them to save money in the way that we did in the 70s, for example.
Well, that's true. I mean, I'm a baby boomer, and we had different jobs available. When you got out of high school, there were a lot of blue-collar jobs available with good benefits. You could raise a family on one person's income. Many times the mother was at home raising the children. She didn't have to go out and work. Although many of the baby boomers have lost their benefits through the years, the millennial and Gen X generations I've read recently are deeply in debt and worried about their own financial future and their security. The millennial generation has carried a high student loan debt that hasn't been forgiven by the government, and they're still trying to work that out. And Gen X, historically, is using their credit card and has a high credit card debt level. So neither group that I read in this article is saving any money for future. They don't have a buffer, and they are just a paycheck away in many cases from losing everything they have. They could be homeless at any time.
So the point is that there's nothing wrong necessarily with people who are homeless. People want to blame the homeless for being homeless. So often when I meet people on the street, in the civic discourse, even sometimes in my own families. And that's not really the issue. Most people don't deserve to be homeless.
No, a lot of people didn't see it coming. And many of the folks that are homeless were not born into this. It's not necessarily a generational thing. People who have been working and through a severe injury or their job was eliminated found themselves there. And it's hard to dig back when you had a high-paying job with good benefits, and now you can only get a temporary job with no benefits, and you're trying to raise a family. So people end up working around the clock with various part-time jobs, trying to piece enough income together to be able to afford housing, which is a high cost in
Kenosha. I also would refer people to the United Way study, Asset Limited Income Constrained Employed. The Alice Report of the United Way will explain this in great detail if you have any doubts about the accuracy of these statements. Let's move on, Leif. The Grace Welcome Center provides breakfasts, doesn't it?
Yes, we do.
You provide breakfasts how many days a week?
We do that each Thursday and Friday.
And you also have a food pantry.
We have a food pantry that has been going now since the beginning of June. We unofficially opened up the last 2 weeks of May, and it's been very successful. We are a choice pantry, so they get to choose their items, both fresh produce and other items to go with it. We help people plan meals, and it's been running very smoothly. We handle 40 people each week on a Tuesday night. We're open from 4:30 to 6:30, and that means we're serving 160 families in our community each week, and we have the capacity to increase that a little bit more as time goes on.
Now, you serve people mainly in the uptown neighborhood, or is that an incorrect assumption?
No, that's a correct assumption. Most of the people that come to our food pantry live within about 12 blocks or a mile of Grace Lutheran Church. And they come, we have helped people out the door, but many times they are enlisting family members or friends to carry their groceries home, and or they're riding their bicycles, precariously balancing their loads so they don't fall over on their way home.
What kind of food is it that you're looking to provide, and how can the community help you? I know you have relationships with food pantry suppliers in the region. Some of this involves trickle-down federal and state funds, if I'm correct. What are your sources of food, and what do you need from the community to help with this feeding program so that people have proper nutrition and particularly their children?
We get the majority of our food from TFAP, an agency out of Milwaukee, and they service most of the food pantries in the area. To supplement that, we have to purchase food from stores. We have applied and are waiting to be approved by Feeding America so that we can buy food for 19 cents a pound. We also have Festival Foods donates food to us every Tuesday morning. We go there and bring in hundreds of pounds of food that we go through and sort and put on our shelves for the pantry that afternoon.
Is it better for people to donate food and similar products, hygiene products, to you, or to give you the money for you to buy them yourself? Presumably, you might be able to get through arrangements some kind of a bulk deal where you get more for the buck than I would.
No, we have ability to stretch the dollar further than an individual can. So if people would like to donate, we want to stretch that donation. So please donate to the Grace Welcome Center Food Pantry to help us in this, I think, very necessary service that we're providing the
uptown
community.
So if I gave you $50 and bought $50, you would probably get more.
We could get more for it than you would if you just went to the grocery store with it.
Well, I think that's important because we all want to use as much leverage as we can.
And then we can get the items that we need at that time because it changes from week to week.
What kinds of items do you find that you need to supply? What are people asking for besides basic food staples, Leif? What else do people need? And you mentioned hygiene items before.
We are one of the few sites where we have feminine hygiene products available to all the women. We give toiletries to men and women and for the children. We also are providing toilet paper, which you cannot get elsewhere, and we will give people emergency clothing items if necessary when they come in and ask for it.
What about personal grooming products, soap,
shampoo? Oh, those are all things, yes, that's all part of the food pantry experience. So the shampoos, the toothpaste, the toothbrushes, deodorants, lotions, hair conditioner, those are all available at the food pantry.
When you first started in this mission of yours, and I have extreme amount of admiration for what you do. Not only do you work hard, because I've watched, I've seen, but it also has a great emotional toll, I think. At least it does on me when I'm there with you. What have you learned? You've been in the trenches working with these issues, helping people for several years now. I wonder how it's changed you and what, in terms of what you know and what you think. I have a feeling that you're not the same leaf that you were when you first dipped a toe into this.
It makes you a stronger person. You have to put things in proper perspective to keep on going. I am always thankful for the opportunity. And, for example, each morning I'm at, on Thursdays and Friday morning, I'm at Festival Foods picking up the groceries. We need to provide breakfast. And I look at the sun rising in the east, and I thank God for the opportunity to serve others each day before I walk in the store. That's a special moment and a special prayer that I have each morning. We are thankful for the opportunity to serve each others, and we are happy to be able to lift each other up. This is they are all members of our family. We become a family. All of our guests are part of us. We work together to support one another. There are times when we cry together. Today, one of our volunteers retired, and he was shedding tears, and so were some of our guests. He's been there since day one. So there's a lot of love in that room, and people support one another. And you see people that have very little that are willing to share with one another. They're reaching out and helping each other. So it puts life in perspective when we think we're having a bad day and you find someone that's sleeping out in the woods and they're hiding right now and they haven't got shelter yet. There's many people out there that haven't come in yet and they're going to wait till it gets colder. You are more thankful for the things that you have.
Is it true that some people think that our homeless population is really the result of people coming here from other places? What I'm hearing from you is that that's a fantasy idea. We have an indigenous homeless population, and it's not like people are just coming here to take advantage of us.
No, that's a good point. And that's frequently used by people. We shouldn't be helping them because we're helping people that are trucked into our community or bussed in. Speaking with Lewis Duncan from Kenosha Human Development Services, he felt that maybe there were 2-3 people at the most each month that come from across the state line. Otherwise, these are people in our own communities that we are serving, people that have been grown and raised here.
So the next time someone tells you that, listeners, shut them down. It's just a false argument.
I've heard that they're busing them in from Madison or Green Bay. That is not the case.
That's just nonsense. Mr. Peterson, Leif Peterson here with me from the Grace Welcome Center. He's the executive director. I wonder if you would recite for us. Always want to know how we can get involved to make things better in our communities here in southeastern Wisconsin. Who do we contact if we want to get involved and do some good?
There's a number of agencies that are doing good work in our community. We are a day program, and we provide a Grace Welcome Center. We are open from 7 o'clock until 10:30 each Thursday and Friday morning, and we provide breakfast and showers. And we have our food pantry on Tuesday night. There is also a number of other, unfortunately not a lot of food pantries, but Shalom Food Pantry is down on Sheridan Road, and they also need support. We have the Salvation Army Food Pantry, which is in town, and they are looking for support. There will be a shift this fall. The Shalom Food Pantry is going to close their operation on Sheridan Road, and they're going to be moving that where they have their shelter on 39th Avenue. That's coming later. We also have the Shalom Shelters. There's a number of agencies in town. We are looking for help at our program because we have gone through increased number of dollars making this food pantry happen, and we are looking for financial support. So if you would consider donating to us, we would greatly appreciate it, and so would our guests.
Well, thank you. Our guests today have been Senator Robert Wirch and Mr. Leif Peterson, Executive Director of the Grace Welcome Center. As always, I encourage our listeners to